is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey Hoopheads, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help your team train bigger and better with exclusive Black Friday savings all month long. Now until November 30th, get $3,500 off the Dr. Dish CT Plus and experience firsthand what the ultimate training solution is all about. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Casey Korn, head men's basketball coach at Lawrence University, and you're listening to Hoopheads podcast.
Are you a basketball coach or trainer looking to connect with new clients? U-Train is here to help you manage your business and reach a wider audience. Best of all, it's completely free to use. Simply create a profile, list your services, post pins, and share your free booking website link. You can set your own rates and schedule, and use U-Train to communicate with clients, manage appointments, handle refunds, and collect payments automatically. So why wait? Join U-Train today for free and start reaching new clients. That's U-Train, U-T-R-A-I-N, U-Train. Download today on the App Store and Google Play. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are jumping on to talk some NBA on a rare NBA night off. So we do not have to pay attention to any games. We do not have to worry that what we say
it's
going to be outdated.
It's because of election day, right? They do this every year at election day. They're not going to have any games.
I think so. I think that has to be what they're tying it to. So
hey, but that sense, college basketball is playing tonight.
College basketball is playing for sure.
Paige Kohler, Olmsted Falls, Paige Kohler dropped 20 in her debut for Bowling Green today, Mike.
Nice. That's pretty good.
It's pretty good for
That's a good debut.
That's a good, very good debut. And they beat Cleveland State.
Nothing wrong with that. Congratulations.
Yeah. Anyways. Paige. Yeah. All right. So we've got some things to talk about tonight. We'll start with our totals, Michael. Just update you. And I don't know if you have you looked at the spreadsheet?
I haven't opened it at all yet. So
okay. Well, maybe you just keep it that way and it's just an exciting thing. So I updated it about an hour and a half, 2 hours ago, and it was really easy to update today because there's no games today. So the current standings is my draft. I have 63 points, and you have 58 points, Mike.
Oh no! I'm falling
It was an 8-point lead as of Sunday. So you've shrunk the lead a little bit.
Nice comeback.
So come back.
I feel pretty good. I'm looking through my picks. I still feel pretty good about most of them.
I would worry about the Pacers' losses, Mike. They just look good. They look good.
But here's the thing. That's one of the last picks, right? I think that might have been my very last pick. And so I think even if the Pacers right now they're 4-3, so they're one game above 500. So I don't think the Pacers are a 50-win team. So maybe they go 42-40, and I would have had, you know. If I take the Pacers' losses, I get 40. If I would have taken their wins, I would have got 42. I don't feel too terrible about where the Pacers are right now in terms of this particular competition. Although, look, Pacers looked really good against the Cavs when they played. And
then I don't know what happened to them when they gave up
Twice, Leonard. Twice, right? They've beat us twice, have they?
Beat us twice, yeah. Two of their four wins are against the Cavs. And then they scored 150, and then they gave up 150. So they've been kind of a team that's all around, up and down. Halliburton, I think, missed one of those games. And he's obviously the key to their team. He's, I don't know what he's averaging. I could pull it up, but he's having a fantastic start to his year. And I think the one thing everybody worried about with him was, could he shoot the ball well enough to, you know, could he be kind of the go-to scorer? And I think that at this point, he's kind of proving that he can be a guy that's going to be able to score points. He's averaging 24 a game, almost 12 assists, and he's shooting 49% from the field and 40% from three on 7.5 attempts a game. So 93% from the line. So I'd say that he's kind of answered at this point the shooting questions. And it definitely seems like he could, I don't know if he's quite there to be the best guy on a championship team, but let's put it this way. He's definitely capable of being a number one guy on a playoff team. And he certainly would be capable of being a number two guy on a championship team. He's had a great start to his season. And I think everything that people thought that Tyrese Halliburton was going to be is certainly what he is at this point.
So I guess that can, let's lead into our like first topic was of our picks. What do we feel best about and what do we feel the worst about? Well, I'll start with what I feel best about. I feel best about, it's probably a tie for me between Denver's wins and Boston wins. I know Boston lost yesterday or,
but they lost to the Timberwolves last night.
Or last night, but I still feel really, really, really good about those. My runner up, Mike, right now, I don't know that I can say that I feel great about it. The fact that Dallas is 6-1 to start the season, that you would not have predicted that, right? Like you would not have said Dallas is going to start the season 6-1. Right.
No,
You were down on Dallas.
Yeah, I was down on Dallas. Although, I mean, I think, you know, there was good signs with Luka coming into the season, but I just felt like they've
got Kyrie really on their team.
They got Kyrie on their team, which is enough to cause any team problems. And again, 7 games in. Okay. I mean, he's still treading the straight and narrow at this point, but the odds that that's going to happen for 82 games. Or he's going to get hurt. I think the odds are pretty good that something's going to go awry at that point.
He's had double doubles the last 2 games. You know.
Yeah. Look, if you're Dallas, you have to be encouraged. Grant Williams has been, I think, everything that Dallas could have expected and more. He's averaging like 15 a game and 7 or 8 rebounds, I think. And Derek Lively has been a guy that went to Duke. He was one of the top 10, I think, high school recruits in the country. And then at Duke, it took him a while to kind of get his footing underneath him. And he didn't play a whole lot in the first half of the season and then kind of came on a little bit in the second half of the season. But certainly he was a guy that when he got drafted, a lot of people thought that Dallas kind of reached for him. And he's been very, very good for them to this point. It looks like he's going to be a good pick and roll partner for Luka moving forward. He's averaging 9 points and 8 rebounds a game, which, look, on a team with Kyrie and Luka, and especially as a rookie, it's not like they're feeding him the ball and giving him shots. Yeah. So he's basically doing that off of rolls to the basket and offensive rebounding and that kind of thing. So he's been very good. And I think when you start looking at what they've done kind of around Luka and Kyrie, they don't have a lot of marquee guys that you're like, oh, who's the third best player on Dallas? And probably Grant Williams. Again, Grant Williams with the Celtics was their 6th, 7th. And last year, in a lot of cases, he was outside of Boston's rotation. So even though he's been very good for Dallas, I don't think that the roster is still where the Mavericks would like it to be. But the fact remains, if Luka's going to play where he's averaging almost a triple-double like he started the season and buying in at least a little bit on defense, and we know what Kyrie can be when he's at his best. So clearly those two guys, just from an offensive standpoint, if you can get any kind of defense, I mean, if that team could finish probably even in the top 20 defensively and just avoid the bottom 10, what they're going to be able to do on offense is probably pretty solid in terms of what that's going to, you know, what that's going to look like. So, I mean, they've been good to this point. I guess I would say when you think about their schedule, you know, you look at who they beat. They beat the Spurs. Okay. They beat the Nets. Okay. They beat the Grizzlies, who people thought were going to be good, but obviously that's not the case. They beat the Bulls. They lost to the Nuggets. They beat the Hornets. They beat the Magic.
They've had a pretty soft schedule. Yeah.
The schedule, I would say, to start out is pretty soft. But look, there's nothing wrong with starting out with a soft schedule and winning the games you're supposed to win. Let's put it this way. If you're an NBA team and you win all the games that you're supposed to win, you're probably going to end up with a pretty good record.
Yeah.
So I think for Dallas's standpoint, you got to be encouraged by the start. I don't know that I feel like they're going to continue to play at this kind of torrid pace. And it'll be interesting to see as their schedule picks up and they start playing some more difficult teams, what that looks like. But certainly Luka playing at a triple-double level and Kyrie being on the floor gives you a chance to beat anybody on any given night if you're the Mavs.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't feel best about them, but they're off to a good start. Like Denver and Boston, although the Denver wins now with Jamal Murray's injury, I don't know how did he word it in his press conference. It wasn't the foreceeable future, but the perceived future.
Perceivable future.
Does not make me feel good that this is going to be a quick turnaround. So it's going to be huge for those young guards, that rookie Strouser, right? Strouser's his name.
Strother.
And like making sure that, you know, they continue to play at the level that they're capable of playing.
Could theoretically be a blessing in disguise, right?
Well, once again, because they're having to step up now, get them some experience now, get them ready for what's probably going to be a long season, and there's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be spots in which he's going to be needed, and they're going to be needed. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, it could be a blessing in disguise. Do I think they're like, oh, please, Jamal Murray, get hurt? No, they're not, but this might be good for them. Also, there's zero chance that Denver is going to rush him back. There's no need. They'll get their wins when they need to get their wins. I mean, they're 7-1. They're going to continue to win games. They might lose a few games now more than they should have. But still, like, I just feel good about this. And I feel good about Boston, too, despite the fact that they lost yesterday. I mean, it required Anthony Edwards to just go off in the end of the game. That was a crazy sequence. I sent it to you. I'm sure you saw it, right, Mike?
I did, yeah.
Anthony Edwards. So like, just a crazy sequence. And good on them. And like we predicted at the beginning of the year, I think we both took the over on the Wolves. I just think that they're a good team. And Denver just Boston just blew it. But at the same time, I feel really good about Boston. They're playing at the level that they're playing this early in the season, with it being the first time these guys are playing together. I just could see that the chemistry might continue to grow and build. And yeah. So those are the ones I feel best about. How about you, Mike? What do you feel best about?
All right. Can I hit on each of those teams real quick that you just talked about? Just real fast.
Yeah.
So start with the Nuggets. So Denver, when you look at them, obviously they have their starting five is probably the best starting five, I would say, in the league. And now you've basically been playing Reggie Jackson like 22 minutes, who barely even saw the floor in the playoff run last year. Christian Braun's getting like 20 minutes a game. Strother's played in 6 out of the 8 games, but he's only averaging like 10 minutes a game. And Peyton Watson's getting 16 minutes. And then other than that, you're just kind of throwing dudes in there in blowouts. So they haven't been extremely deep, but I think that they are really high on Braun, Strother, and Peyton Watson are the three young guys that they really felt like could continue to step up and would play an important role for them over the course of the regular season. So those guys are all going to get opportunities that maybe they wouldn't have gotten with Jamal Murray out. So short run, not a good thing for Denver, but in the long run for them being ready to play potentially in meaningful games later on, I think it could be a positive. And playing with Jokic makes things easier on everybody. And if there's any spot you want to throw a rookie in, I think throwing a rookie into Denver's lineup to be able to play with Jokic and just the way he reads the floor and sets guys up and all the things that he does to help a team win, I think that's a pretty good situation for Denver, despite you don't want to see Jamal Murray out. But I think in the long term, it may not hurt him all that much. than with the Celtics. I think the Celtics season comes down to, does Porzingis stay healthy? Because if Porzingis stays healthy, now you can have Al Horford as your guy off the bench, and Al Horford can play 20 minutes, 22 minutes. When you start talking about Porzingis is out, and now you've got to give starters minutes to Al Horford at what, 36, 37 years old, and he's been, I would say, a lot less effective in his minutes this year. He's been less productive than he's been in the past, which not surprising as he keeps getting older. So I think that if they can keep Porzingis healthy and keep Horford's minutes down, then I think you're in a situation where Boston's going to be fine. We know that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, what they're going to do. There was a stat, I think Zach Lowe shared it on his podcast, something where the Celtics are plus some ridiculous number with Tatum on the field, on the court, and minus a ridiculous number, kind of like the LeBron numbers, which we'll talk about at some point. But Tatum on the floor, Boston is outscoring teams by like 70 points. And without Tatum on the floor, they're minus whatever, 30 something. So it's a huge difference.
It's the same thing with LeBron, Mike. Did you see that there was a LeBron on the floor, him off the floor? It's ginormous.
It's almost the same. I mean, it's a very similar stat line when you start looking at the impact that Tatum's had on the floor versus when Tatum's off the floor. So I think that, like I said, with Boston, to me, if you keep Porzingis healthy, you're going to be in a much better position. Right now, Horford's playing 23 minutes a game, and that's kind of where you want him to stay. Porzingis is averaging 30. So there's your 48 minutes of center play between those two guys. But Horford's shooting 38% from the field and 25% from three. So not nearly as effective as he's been. Now, small sample size, and I'm sure he's going to get better. But the Celtics, if they're healthy, that team is just a monster defensively. And I still don't trust Tatum the same way I trust the very, very best players, but they might have enough around him that they could eat a game or two in a seven-game series where Tatum's not quite as best the way they're currently constituted. And then your last team that you talked about was, the Timberwolves. So Timberwolves also have, I think, where when you have Gobert, Jaden McDaniels, and Anthony Edwards on the floor, that particular grouping is winning big minutes. And yep, their plus minus with those three guys on the floor is huge. And their team, when you start thinking about Jaden McDaniels, is like 6'10", Anthony Edwards is what, 6'6", but just huge and long and athletic. Then you got Gobert, where I think teams are shooting something like 37% at the rim against Gobert. And Towns, despite the fact that he's not really a great defender, but he's a big dude. And then you got Conley. I think Minnesota, the key for them is just the continued development of Anthony Edwards. And it certainly seems like his trajectory continues to go up and up and up. And if they can figure out a way to maximize, it feels like Cat hasn't been super effective to this point, but Gobert has been good, especially on the defensive end of the floor. And if you get the best version of Anthony Edwards and you get an effective Gobert defensively, which is what they've had to this point, Minnesota is going to be good. I mean, they're going to be good if Edwards continues to play well. I mean, I think they have a chance to do kind of what we thought they would do, which is certainly finish in the top six out in the West. So yeah, I think you have a right to feel pretty good about all those. For me, as I look through my list, I feel pretty good about my Wizards losses, which was my number one pick. I feel pretty confident that the Wizards are.
Did you ever go watch the Jordan Poole, Shaqtin' a Fool stuff?
Yeah.
Like, did you?
I mean, I did watch that. They may not, I mean, the Wizards may not be, they may not be the worst team. They very well may be, but I guess you could maybe make an argument that somebody's worse than them. But let's put it this way. I'm pretty confident that they're going to finish with one of the three worst records, the three worst records in the league. So I feel pretty good about that one. I still feel good about my Bucks wins. I know that they scuffled a little bit out of the gate, but I think they're starting to really
Middleton,
get it together.
Middleton's concerning, Mike, right?
It is, for sure. I mean, I think that when you start looking at his minutes limit and the fact that, honestly, it feels like he's been hurt now for basically since they won the championship, it feels like he's been having some type of injury issue.
Perpetual state of being injured.
Yes, perpetual state of being injured or being less than full capacity or being on a minutes limit or whatever, which is a little bit concerning, especially when you start out the beginning of the season when you're on a minutes restriction. That's never a good thing. But I still think that Dame and Giannis are going to figure it out. Giannis, I think, in the last four games has gone 30-plus and double-digit rebounds in all four of those games. So he's starting to round into form. And I think Milwaukee, those two guys are too good that if they're healthy, I just don't see how they don't win 50-plus games. It just, I don't see it. And then I guess the last one I would say that I feel pretty good about at this point would probably, I guess I feel pretty good about the Warriors wins. I mean, I'm not necessarily, again, as people know, I'm not a huge Warriors fan, but I do think that they're, as long as stuff stays healthy, they're going to win a lot of games. They got a good chance of winning the cookie. So those are the three that I probably feel the strongest about at this point on the positive side.
All right. So why don't you lead off with what teams you feel worried about?
All right. So I have the Memphis Grizzlies wins. So I feel a little worried. I feel a little worried about the Grizzlies wins at 1-6. Now,
that's a valid worry.
That is a valid worry. Now, obviously, there are some, I guess my argument, or I guess I would go back to what I talked about with the Pacers, that if Ja comes back, I mean, there's a lot of ifs on this team right now because you lose Steven Adams, done. Brandon Clark, I hear conflicting things about whether there's a chance that he's going to come back at some point during the season. And then obviously there was the Ja article where, his suspension ends after 25 games, but where's he going to be at? Where's his head's at? Is he really going to be ready to go at game 25? How long is it going to take him to reintegrate into what they're doing? You got Marcus Smart trying to integrate himself into that lineup, figure out what that looks like. So I think with Memphis, I don't see them as being at the level where they've been the last couple of years, obviously, where they finished second in the Western Conference. I don't think that there's much threat of that happening. For me, it comes down to, is Memphis going to finish? Do they have a chance to get up to 500 or above? Where would I rather have Memphis losses than have Memphis wins? I still think the Memphis wins is going to be okay when Ja gets back, only in a sense of I think they're going to be within a couple games of 500 one way or the other if things go well. Now, if things go south and Ja doesn't come back or there's problems when he does return, then certainly this could be a team that could be a disastrous pick for me where I'm not sure I'd feel too good about that one. And other than that, honestly, like I feel pretty good about everything else I have. Like
Kings wins, right? You now, feel good about the Kings? You feel good about the Kings?
Yeah. I feel good about the Kings. And I think the reason why I feel good about the Kings is because they've been losing games. But let me look. I think De'Aaron Fox, if I'm not mistaken, I know he's missed the last couple games. And I just think that now look, they've lost twice to the Rockets, but then they've also lost twice to the Warriors. So I guess you could say those are two okay losses and then two pretty bad losses when you start talking about that. But right now, De'Aaron Fox has played only played three games. So he's been out the last three. When he was in there, he's averaging 31, 4 rebounds and 6 assists. So I think you take the best player, the guy who basically drives that team and that offense, you take him out of the lineup, and that makes a huge, huge difference. So I'm not that worried about Sacramento. I think what you have to worry about in the West with any of these teams is just the conference is so good. I mean, there's just so many good teams that you have this little stretch for three games where De'Aaron Fox is out and you go 0-3, or let's say he misses another week and misses three more games and you go 1-5. That's going to make a huge difference in where you finish in the standings because there just aren't any gimme games. I mean, everybody in the Western Conference, for the most part, I think at least at this point in the season, is trying to win games. And so these little injury blips can make a big difference in where you finish in the standings. But I still feel okay with the Kings. I mean, I don't think the Kings are going to be – they're not going to be a 35-win team. I would say, again, worst-case scenario, they're right around 500 if Fox is healthy.
Okay. As far as the teams that I'm most concerned with, like, I took Phoenix pretty high, and I took the Heat pretty high. And I think that was a mistake.
Which one do you feel better about?
Well, the Heat had a good win against the Lakers yesterday, but once again, the Lakers are decimated right now. And that's another team I could maybe throw in here. But I just think they're good. The Lakers, I feel like I probably feel better about the Heat over the Phoenix, but I don't really necessarily know that that tracks. I mean, the Heat have been kind of a mess, but I feel good about their win yesterday. And whereas the Suns, the guys haven't even all played together, right? Like, they haven't played together yet.
Beal hasn't played yet.
And Nurkic hasn't played terrible, but I saw a stat comparing Ayton and Nurkic's stats, and Ayton is by far outperforming. Now, once again, Ayton doesn't have
addition by subtraction for Phoenix there.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't necessarily know that I feel good about either of those teams, but and they probably will, all three of those teams, the Suns, the Heat, and the Lakers will probably finish above 400 or 500, but I don't think they're going to perform nearly as good as I had hoped, especially the Phoenix team, who I'm pretty sure I can't remember if I took the over or the under, but anyways, I think that's where I'm at. I feel pretty good about all the teams that I chose the losses. As of now, the Bulls and the Raptors, I'm feeling very vindicated about the Raptors right now, because they have not, I know they looked good in one game, but they have not looked good since.
Scotty Barnes has been playing well.
Yeah.
Which is a good sign for Toronto.
I guess the Magic losses is also a little concerning, Mike, because they actually look pretty confident.
Fultz has been out.
What'd you say?
They're four and three, and Fultz has been out too. I think he's only played like two games.
So they look competent, Mike. So they could very well end up over 500, or right around 500, which is not where I necessarily would have thought they'd be. So that's my headspace.
I got you. Okay, so I think when you look at that, if I look at the teams I have the losses for, just kind of piggyback on what you were talking, I feel good about. I have Wizards losses. I feel good there. Hornets losses. I feel good there. Detroit losses. I feel good there. Rockets losses. I still feel pretty good there. I mean, their Rockets are 3-3, but I guess I took that pretty high. That was my sixth pick, so that could be a bad one. Utah, I feel pretty good. Utah's 2-6. Pacers, we already talked about, and all my other teams I have.
I'm surprised didn't say you were concerned about the Knicks wins, Mike. I know they beat the Cavs, but Julius Randle looked terrible.
Yeah, but I think the Knicks are what they are. I think they're gonna be above 500. They're gonna win 42, 43, 44 games somewhere in there. I just think they're gonna get together. They're just a tough physical team. Tibbs is going to play those guys lots of minutes. They're built to win regular season games. They're going to grind teams down. They're just going to play harder than teams. They're going to win games they shouldn't. And so I feel like they're going to finish. And you know what's interesting is just as you start thinking about this and looking at it and really trying to identify what's happening with some of these teams, what I get the sense of is that there's just a ton of teams that are any given night where – a lot of these teams are the same. Like there's a lot of good teams and all these teams are competing. And so I think you're going to end up seeing, which was reflected in the over-unders, I think you're going to see a lot of teams sort of jumbled together between like 40 wins and 45 wins. I think there's gonna be a lot of teams in that range, much more than in the average season. That's kind of how I would look at it as we go down and get further into the season and eventually get to the end. I think you're going to end up with a lot of teams bunched up in that low 40s range, just because there just aren't easy games. Like, you can't just say, okay, I'm going to show up and I'm going to win this game the way you could maybe in the last several years and the way you can in most years. Let's face it, there's 5, 6, 7 teams that by halfway through the season, it's clear they're not trying to win. There's so many teams now that are either A, not incentivized to lose because they don't have all, you know, they don't have their draft picks. Those are out the door to somebody else. And like a lot of these young teams are, they're sort of in the second stage of rebuilding where, yeah, they still have their young guys, but they're also trying to put together and start to build a culture of winning and not just throw seasons completely away just to test out and see how's this guy. And
not process that means that, 4.0 or yeah, whatever we're in.
Yeah, I mean, right, exactly. That means you better show up and play. Like,
yeah,
the Houston Rockets last year, you could show up with your C game and you're probably going to beat the Houston Rockets. You show up with your C game against this Houston team this year and you're not beating them. And so I think that's a big difference. Like, really, again, to me, the Wizards are really the only team that is, and I don't even know if I'd say they're trying to lose. They're, I'm sure, fine to lose. But look, Jordan Poole, he may be a clown, but the guy can score. And Kuzma's a solid player, and they have some decent guys. Like, they're not totally and completely filled with rookies and second year guys who have no concept of what they're doing. I mean, I still think they're probably the worst team in the league, but they're better than some of the worst team in the league teams we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years, I would say.
I mean, it's true. I agree. So is there anything else you want to say about my other teams, or are we good? Are we good?
No, I think we're good. I think we're good. Right, let's talk to Harden trade.
You want to talk about that again?
I mean, let's just talk. I don't know.
Here's what I'm gonna say.
Go ahead.
We talked about it last week. But,
did we talk about I'm a system? I'm not a system player. We did not talk about that. I mean, what a guy's a clown, man. He's just a complete clown.
I'm not a piece of the system. I am the system or something. Let me just tell you. His system last night was standing in the corner not doing anything. That's what he was doing. I mean, that team is going to be a clown show the whole season.
Let's all say a prayer for Ty Lue.
Ty Lue, I saw him on it. I thought I've said this on the podcast before. I rode on a plane with Ty Lue. Coming back from Orlando.
You did share that.
Yeah. Ty Lue's a good dude. I feel bad for him. Right?
He's got a tremendous collection of talent to work with.
Well, he's got a few systems to work with too. So did they end up winning last night or did they lose? Oh no, they lost.
111-97. They got crunched, man. They got crunched. I don't feel like their collection of guys, like individually, again, you can make the case for.
Oh, they got Amir Coffey still, though, Mike. They still have Amir Coffey.
All right, so that's a positive for them. You can make a case for the talent of their four guys, right? So Kawhi, when he's at his best, still is probably one of the 5, 6, 7 best players in the league. The question is, are you ever going to get the best version of Kawhi Leonard for any length of time? We saw it in the first two games of the playoffs last year, and he got hurt. And you see it for stretches in the regular season, and then he gets hurt. And so when the track record is that he's going to get hurt, it's hard to believe in Kawhi Leonard at this point. Paul George playing tremendous basketball at this point. But again,
he was pitiful last night.
For what length of time? Yeah. And look, Paul George is a good player, and he does a lot of good things, and I think he's good enough when healthy to be the second best player on a championship.
As long as he's not in
the
bubble, he's great.
Yeah, I think he can still be the second best player on a championship team. I think he's that good. I think he does that many things to impact winning. He's a good defender. He rebounds. He can pass the ball. He can shoot it. I like Paul George as a player, but he's also a guy who, when you look at this team, he's probably of those three guys, he's the guy who needs the ball the least. And the reality might be that you might want the ball actually in his hands the most, because he kind of has the best concept of how to play team basketball and also score at the same time.
I'm just saying, Mike, I'm looking at these stats from last night, and I think he was the weak link last night. I'm just saying. You got Harden, 6 of 9. You got Westbrook, 8 of 13. You got Kawhi, 8 of 16. Zubac, 3 of 3.
Let's ship Paul George out, man.
Paul George, 2 of 11. Paul George, 4. Isaac Okoro.
Okay. Can I pour some cold water on your bearing?
No, Paul George, here's the cold water. Here's the cold water. The plus minus is Harden minus 18.
No. Okay. All right.
Kawhi Leonard minus 14. Paul George minus 7. So there you go.
Paul George is averaging for the season. He's averaging 26 points a game, 5 rebounds, 4 assists on 51% shooting from the field and 46% shooting from 3. So, and 95% shooting from the line. So,
He's just got sucked into the James Harden black hole. Then he's going to now be terrible because James Harden is around him. I mean, would that be surprising to you, Mike? Would that be terrible?
It would not be surprising at all to me at all. And I think the problem is that I just – James Harden doesn't – he doesn't make anyone else better. He doesn't amplify any of these other guys. Like, he doesn't make what any of the rest of them do – better.
He makes gamblers better, Mike, because people are going to bet against him.
Like, there's all these stats out there how he doesn't shoot, catch, and shoot threes. Well, when you have three other guys that like to have the ball and draw lots of attention from the defense, guess what gets created, right? Kick out wide open threes. Guys who are standing. Yeah. And when you're not willing to take those shots for whatever reason, you're hurting your team. And look, we made fun of the Clippers last year when they signed Westbrook, and that actually has worked out about as well as anybody had any proof to be able to do.
I almost feel like he revitalized his career a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, nobody had any right to be able to think that he was going to be as good as what he's been. And now you're taking and you're basically bringing in Harden to play that exact same role. There's been lots of talk and lots of things written that eventually what's going to happen is Westbrook's got to go to the bench and be sign of the, you know, run the second unit, kind of like what Chris Paul is doing for the Warriors, where maybe you're playing one style when Harden's on the floor, and then you're playing a different style when Westbrook comes in and you're picking up the pace and Harden's more methodical. And so you're almost playing, it's almost like two different, it's a game within a game. You're playing two different styles of games. You're playing the Steph Curry game for some of the time with the Warriors, and then you're playing the Chris Paul game. And with the Clippers, you're playing the Harden game sometimes, you're playing the Westbrook game sometimes. And that's probably true. But anybody who's coached basketball knows that, especially when you're talking about the NBA level, you've got to be able to massage egos and keep guys happy. And I don't think from everything that we know about Russell Westbrook, it doesn't seem like he's going to go quietly into the night when Ty Lue tells him, hey, you're going to start coming off the bench. So I think there's chemistry issues to be worked out with this team. And look, we can analyze it X's and O's all we want, and this and that and the other thing. The bottom line is that if you're depending on James Harden in any way, shape, or form, and yeah, on this team, theoretically, if all four of those guys are healthy, do you need James Harden to put up 35 point per game averages in the playoffs for the Clippers to win if you have the very best version of Kawhi and Paul George and Russell Westbrook? No, probably not. But you're still going to need James Harden to be functional. You're going to need him to play and not be lethargic and not just sleepwalk through playoff games, which he's done over and over again in his career. I just don't buy it. No matter how good it looks or how bad it looks, my initial analysis.
We have to change the name of this podcast to the Harden Bashing Podcast.
maybe.
All right. So
the I Hate Harden Pod.
I Hate Harden Pod.
I like it.
We could just talk for 15 minutes about Harden once a week.
Yeah, it's not gonna go well. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. All right. So then the last thing we talked about doing, Mike, is taking the teams, taking each section, like the top six teams, and what team's gonna fall out of the top six teams, and maybe even fall down out into the out of the play-in tournament. Then what team's gonna go in the play-in tournament and either go up or go down? And the last thing is, what team is most likely in the bottom that we're going to move up? So I thought we'd start in the Eastern Conference, Mike. Does that sound like a plan?
Sounds good. Why don't we alternate? You go first, and then we'll alternate. So we'll each get three turns to go first, picking our team.
All right. So I think the team in the top six in the East that's the most likely to fall out is probably Orlando. I do like what I've seen from them, but when I honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if like three of these teams were not in the top six by the end of the season, right? Like, Atlanta's played all right. But I don't know how sustainable it is. I mean, DeJounte Murray's played pretty well. Indiana's played well. Like we've already mentioned, as we previously mentioned, and we previously mentioned to Orlando. I think Orlando's probably the most likely team to drop out of the top six, but I wouldn't be surprised if any of those other three teams. I'm willing to go on record now and say the other three teams are all cemented in the top six and they're not going to go anywhere. Would that be a fair assessment, Mike? There's
Boston,
no way.
Philly and Milwaukee.
Yeah, those teams are top three teams. Those are done. That's done. They're top six teams for sure. There's no way they're falling out of the top six.
I don't think so. I mean, I think
like they obviously this is all barring a catastrophic injury to someone.
Correct.
Like if
correct.
So. Philly, do you agree with my assessment?
Philly feels the least sustainable to me. Although getting Harden out of town clearly was good for this team. Maxey has been what people thought they were going to, what he was going to be, right? Or what people in Philadelphia hoped that he could be. He's been great to start their season. And I think that, look, they've gotten off to a quick start and Embiid at the end of the season, not many injuries, not nicked up. Playing really well.
He had a pretty good game yesterday, albeit against the Wizards.
Had 48 the other night. And there's no question about Embiid's talent. I've said it over and over again. Like he's, from a talent standpoint, he's as talented as anybody in the league. I just, when it comes to the playoffs, not as bad as Harden, but certainly he's been a guy that has not played to his capacity in the playoffs for reasons that I continue to. I've said for a long time that the guy's got to get in. He's got to be in better shape. And yeah, he's had injuries, but I just don't think you can count on Joel Embiid in a playoff run to be your best player for 44 minutes in four playoff series repeatedly for that long. I just don't see it. He hasn't proven it. And I don't think that anything's different there. So regular season wise, I think getting Harden out of town and getting that circus shipped off to LA has certainly helped. I'm sure the morale of the Philadelphia 76ers and the fact that Maxey has stepped up into that role of being the guy with the ball in his hands and making decisions and playing very, very well out of the gate bodes well for Philly staying in the top six. I'm going to say the Pacers are the most likely team to fall out. I know that that kind of cuts against the grain. I agree with you that Orlando is probably likely to fall out too. And I would say Atlanta, there's probably a decent chance that they're not in the top six as well. But if I was going to pick the team out of these three, I'm going to say the Pacers. I'm not really sure why, because again, I think Halliburton is right there. I mean, let's put it this way. I would much rather have Tyrese Halliburton as my best player than Trae Young. And I'm not sure that.
Is Trae Young Atlanta's best player? I'm going to say right now, I think Murray's a better player than Trae Young right now.
Maybe, but reputationally, people would still tell you that Trae Young is probably the better player. I'm not sure they're right. But, and then when you look at Orlando, I think Orlando just has a collection of talent that is going to continue to get better over the course of the season. This is a team that certainly is on an upswing, and you look a year or two more into the future and you think about what Franz Wagner and Banchero can be. I think those two guys are the cornerstones of a really, really, really good team. And I think push comes to shove. I like Orlando's overall roster better, even though I do think that Halliburton is the best player on any of these three teams at this point. So, but I'm going to take the Pacers as the team to fall out.
All right. You get to pick do the next one. What team in the play-in do you predict is going to either go up?
The play-in, I think the Cavs are the team that is going to move up. I think the Cavs move up into the top six. I don't see how with the four guys that they have, plus adding Strus to that mix, I don't see how the Cavs stay in the play-in. They're certainly going to get to the top six. I think they have a decent chance to – most people had them pegged at three or four going into the season. I certainly expect that's where this team will finish. I still have some concerns about our toughness and our rebounding. I went to the game against the Warriors the other night. And
inside scoop Warriors, right here.
Granted, the Warriors are teeny tiny, and Looney played 15 minutes. I'm not sure. Cal and I were watching the game, and about midway through the fourth quarter, I'm like, has Looney even played this half? And I think he might have started the half, or maybe he played like 2 minutes in the third quarter. but he didn't play hardly at all. And when Golden State goes small, the Cavs just punished him. Jared Allen's offensive rebound. You forget, like, Jared Allen did not have a good playoff series against the Knicks, and Mitchell Robinson basically tore him up. But Jared Allen creates so many extra possessions for the Cavs, and he really is a good finisher around the basket. I mean, he shoots with either hand. He dunks it. You forget how much the Cavs, with the big impact that he has on this team, especially on the defensive end of the floor. And then, like I said, offensive rebounding, creating extra possession. So it was good to see him back. I think that they've been kind of uneven. Their defense hasn't been great. Some of that I attribute to Allen being out. Mitchell's off to a fantastic start. He's averaging like close to 33 a game, and he's shooting up 52-53%, something like that, from the floor. Garland's been a little sloppy with the ball. His two turnovers against Indiana in that in-season tournament game, he had two really bad turnovers. One where he threw a kick ahead that got stolen. I forget what the other one is now off the top of my head.
That's because of that stupid blue floor.
Yeah, I guess so. I like the floor. I like the courts. I'm a fan. I'm down with it. I like it.
You cannot have liked the Chicago Bulls one. That one hurt my eyes.
I like them all, man. I like them all because No, it's fun. It's just something different. And I like that you can turn on the TV. I think the NBA is a good thought process to have it be instantly identifiable, that when you turn it on, you see that court. Whether you think the court is ugly or you think the court is cool, when you turn it on, you clearly know it's something different.
I love J.J. Redick's. You saw J.J. Redick's quote, right?
No, what did he say?
He said, I looked at the Clippers court and I saw a trophy at midcourt and I was really confused.
There you go. Oh, he's got to get in a good Clippers dig. JJ was with the Clippers, so I guess he can take whatever shots he wants. But
your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the portfolio guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your coaching portfolio guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
The Cavs have not. I thought they looked really good against the Warriors, but they haven't.
It's time
good
for
up
our favorite. It's time to return our favorite game that we haven't done this year yet.
What's that?
Predict their record this week.
The schedule.
Tomorrow they play they play the Thunder in Oklahoma City.
It's a loss.
I'm giving us a win. They revenge almost win? Beat the Thunder without Jared Allen last time and Darius Garland.
Okay, all right, revenge win.
Saturday. At Golden State.
I can't imagine we're going in and winning that game. Did you know we hadn't beaten them since Christmas 2016?
In regular season.
Yeah, that was crazy, man. I didn't realize that. That was kind of crazy.
So you think that Golden State wins at home?
Yes.
So they're going 0-2 for you. Yep. And I'm saying they're losing as well, 1-1. And then next Monday, you'll be able to watch this game, Mike, because it's on NBA TV. Oh, maybe not, though, because it might be.
I got Bally, so I can watch whatever game.
Oh, you
I
got
want
Bally
to.
Back. Yeah. Sacramento.
You got to win that one. That's
so you're saying they're going one and you're saying they're going 1-2.
I think 1-2 is realistic. Maybe it's a different combination.
I'm thinking 2-1.
If they go 2-1. That's a good road trip. If they go 2-1.
So let's just finish it off, and then we can rehash this one. The last game of that road trip is the Blazers next Wednesday.
So all right. So you, good you're road saying trip. You go 3-1, 2-2. I think you'd be happy with. I think if you're 2-2, you come out of it and you're like, okay, 2-2. You're okay with 2-2. You'd like to go 3-1, but I think you're okay going 2-2.
And then, looking at the schedule, the rest of the, after that, we have some We have some heavy hitters, you know, after that. I won't still belabor that right
every
now.
Every game, but look, there aren't any easy games. I mean, that's the thing.
Oh, there's an easy game up. There's one easy game coming up. We play Detroit in a few weeks. I think that's an easy game.
All right. Hey, we played Indiana twice. We gave Indiana two of their four wins. So
yeah. All right. So then I guess
Cavs are going to move out of there. Cavs are gonna move out.
I was going to say that was my team, so I don't need to belabor the point anymore on that one. So I agree. Sounds good. That's the team. All right. The team at the bottom that is most likely to come up, Mike.
Going it's not against the Wizards. Okay.
It's not the Detroit Pistons.
Okay.
It's not Charlotte.
Okay.
God. Ugh. I'm going to say Chicago. I don't really feel good about it. Just because I picked against Toronto. I picked against both Chicago and Toronto at the beginning of the year, saying they were going to be the under. I honestly, Mike, I wouldn't be surprised if this is the top 10 teams were the top 10 teams.
Miami's 11 right now, dude.
I'm looking at NBA.com. No, I'm on the NBA. I'm on the NBA app, and I don't believe any. I'm looking at the NBA app.
What's Miami's record on there?
3-4.
Yeah, that's what I have them at.
This is the NBA app.
ESPN has Miami 11 outside the play-in.
Nope, I'm showing it to you right now. If you look at my screen.
All right, that's fine. All right, so Toronto's
11, Chicago's 12.
All right, Toronto's 11. Okay. All right.
I mean, I think of the teams, Toronto's probably the most likely to come up, but I wouldn't be surprised if the top 10 was the top 10 right now. Planting my flag. I wouldn't be like Toronto just hasn't looked good.
I think we can agree that the Wizards, Pistons, and Hornets are unlikely to make it to the play-in. I think we'd agree with that. Then I think I would loop in the Bulls, Nets, and Raptors. To me, I would say those three teams are probably fighting for one spot. But again, we're also looking at Orlando. Could be 4-4. Indiana could be 4-4. Atlanta could be 4-4. I think that those teams are probably a cut above those other teams. Although, I don't know. I mean, when you think about Toronto with Barnes and Siakam, they should be. Like I said, so many of these teams are looking. They all look the same. A week from now, the same standings could look completely different. I think the East is going to be super jumbled for a lot of the year. Maybe you eventually get the top four teams to separate if the Cavs get their act together. And then after that, it's kind of a mishmash. But there's a lot of teams that look the same to me as far as where I think they're going to finish. All right. So I would have picked, based on the standings that I'm looking at ESPN, I would have said Miami. But if Miami's already in there, I would probably say Toronto would move up. Just because, again, I think that Siakam, Barnes, to me, that's a pretty good start of two guys that should be able to get you to the 10 seed ahead of the Chicago Bulls. I could see the Bulls being a team that, come the trade deadline, finally admits that, hey, it might be time for us to see what we can get for some of our guys and see what happens. So that's where I would go with that one. All right. And then I'm picking first in the Western Conference of the team that's going to fall out. So I think of all the teams there that are likely to fall out, the Denver Nuggets are not going to fall out. The Golden State Warriors are not going to fall out. And then I think any of those other four teams, so I'm looking at the Thunder, Pelicans, Timberwolves, and Mavericks. I think any one of those four could potentially be a team that could fall out. I'm actually going to go with the I'm going to say that the Dallas Mavericks are going to fall out of the top six.
Wow.
Because kind of like what we talked about earlier, I think I don't trust the Kyrie Irving experience to go and be smooth sailing for the rest of the season. And I think that if you take Kyrie out of that equation, I think that you're suddenly scraping for offense. And if the Dallas doesn't have a great offense, I'm not sure that what they have defensively is going to be good enough to hold up and keep them in the top six. Their 6-1 start certainly helps their cause and definitely helps them when you start looking at, hey, are they going to be a team that can at least make the play-in? Banking 6 wins early clearly helps, but I think they're the most likely of those teams to fall out. But you could easily make a case for the Timberwolves, Pelicans, or Thunder falling out.
I'm going to say the Pelicans, Mike, because of multiple factors. CJ McCollum, collapsed lung situation. Yep. This is the second time this has happened,
second
right?
Second time. Yeah, that's weird, man. That's a weird.
That's got to be concerning. A weird injury. That's concerning.
Very concerning.
That's reason one. Reason two. Zion, and although he looks fantastic, as long as he's looked fantastic, but is he going to stay healthy? Okay, I would like nothing more for him to stay healthy, Mike. I want to be clear here. I want to be wrong. I want to be wrong.
But it would be fun. Here's the thing. It would be fun. I think it would be so much fun to see Zion play in a playoff series.
Whoa.
And see what teams would do with him and what he could potentially do from just
what Mike, when I have teams to ask have
time, when teams have time to game plan. Yeah, what?
I'm scrolling the NBA thing about the Pelicans just because I was trying to find some stats. There's only one number that's retired for the New Orleans Pelicans. I don't exactly know how this person is retired as a New Orleans Pelican. You want to take a guess as to who it is?
Pete Maravich?
It is Pete Maravich.
So that's the New Orleans Jazz.
But that's the whole craziness with all the teams that have moved. I don't like it.
Yeah, it's hard to know and track where that all comes together. But, well, it feels like New Orleans has been a franchise. And especially because
he got
that,
inducted in 2002.
Yeah.
Pelicans weren't around in 2002. Neither were the Hornets involved.
I don't know, because the Hornets were the Hornets were the Bobcats, or the Bobcats were the Hornets, or the Pelicans were the Thunder, it's all, you know.
Yeah, sorry. It's all kind of goofy.
Yeah, it's very goofy. That is very goofy. Let's put it that way. So,
and then you look at like all time records. Anthony Davis leads the point totals, and Chris Paul leads the total assists. Is it because he was like? I'm so confused by that. How? Like,
I don't know. It is what it is. Because he was the New Orleans, right? The New Orleans Hornets.
Yeah.
Right? They were the New Orleans Hornets for a while, weren't they?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's just whatever. Crazy. Anyway, okay. Sorry.
All right. Move on. Your pick.
Okay. So team that I think is going to move up, man. Whew. I'm actually going to go the opposite way. Houston's going to fall out. That's what I'm going with. I don't believe that's
your safest. I think that's your safest bet. Yeah. I guess I would probably pick. Oh man, I don't. When you talk about, I go back to our old bit right here where I don't trust any of these teams. The Clippers, I don't trust them. The Suns, I don't trust them. The Lakers, don't trust them. There's none of those teams that I'm like, well, that team's definitely going to move up.
Now, NBA.com does not have the Suns in the play-in right now. They have a Clippers, Houston, Spurs, Lakers.
Okay, so they have the Suns out. If the Spurs are in there, then I would definitely pick the Spurs to fall down below.
Houston?
Of those teams. I mean, Houston probably be my number one choice, but just to go against the grain or not pick the same team as you, I would say the Spurs.
Okay.
Let me just say, of the teams that I would think to move up amongst these teams, I honestly think I might take the Clippers.
After all the bashing you did,
Look, Phoenix isn't going to be healthy. They're not going to be healthy all year. They're just not. Durant's averaging like 38 minutes a game. It's only a matter of time before he has his 30 game injury. And Booker and that roster is just, that's not enough to carry them into the top six. Not in this Western Conference. The Lakers, LeBron's averaging 36 minutes a game. When he's off the floor, the Lakers are abjectly horrible.
Wasn't he supposed to be playing 28 to 30 minutes a game?
Yeah. He's going to be doing that. They're going to be making that announcement when he's 74 that, hey, we're going to try to get LeBron's minutes under 30 this year. And he's going to be deferring to Anthony Davis's kid, who they're going to be pumping up for the MVP award. And LeBron's still going to have the ball in his hands playing 37 minutes a game. It's insane what he's doing. It's just insane. Kudos to LeBron. The dude is he's incredible. He's absolutely incredible. I know I've had my share of doubts about LeBron, but I at this point, unassailably, he has the greatest. He's not the greatest player of all time, but he has the greatest career. I think that he's putting Kareem in his rearview mirror faster than any of us can even begin to look. So kudos to LeBron. Unbelievable what the guy's doing. Absolutely just incredible. But I don't think that those two guys are going to stay healthy to the point where I feel confident that the Lakers are going to move up. The Clippers, they have four dudes. And so even if two of those dudes get healthy, I think that they have enough to kind of cobble together enough wins where I could see them moving up into the top six. That's my argument for that. Not that I think it's going to, quote, work, but just I feel like they have enough guys in the regular season that they can plow their way to 45, 46 wins, which might be enough to get you into the top six the way that the wins are going to be spread out across this conference. So I would say Clippers moving up.
Okay. And then you get to pick the last one. So the teams at the bottom, Phoenix, Portland, Sacramento, Utah, Memphis.
I mean, you have to say Phoenix. If Phoenix is in that bottom group, that they're going to clearly, I think, move up into the play-in. They have more talent. They have more motivation than some of these other teams. Although you could probably make a good case for Sacramento. I don't see Sacramento as finishing in the bottom five of the Western Conference either. I think Sacramento easily moves up. They might be even an even better bet to move up into the.
I'm picking Phoenix because that's why I took I feel like I have to. I have to take Phoenix.
Makes sense. All right. Is there anything else? Wembanyama, we didn't really mention Wemby at all, but clearly this dude, like the things that he's doing, I mean, at age 19, at his size, there's no question that if this guy's healthy, that he's going to be one of the two, three best players in the league sooner rather than later. I mean, it's not going to be very long before already what he does defensively and the things that he can do offensively. And I don't know what growing into his body, like you hear, oh, he's going to grow into his body. I don't know what that looks like for a dude who's 7'5" and is as skinny as he is. I don't know what he eventually looks like, but we've never seen a package of skills in a guy that big. And it's going to be fun to watch. Let's put it that way. If he maximizes his talent and he does, let's just say that his body started to resemble like a 6'7" dude's body in terms of just his build. Like he doesn't have to get to be, I mean, he doesn't have to put on 100 pounds, which he probably could easily and still look. I mean, if he just puts on 30 pounds or 40 pounds and he looks like just a normal NBA player, it's frightening what this guy can be because he does things that nobody else, maybe in the history of the game, has been capable of doing just because of his length. I mean, it's incredible.
Yep. All right, Mike, it's time.
Okay.
30-0. I was there. You witnessed the Cavs beat the Warriors. I witnessed the Browns destroy Clayton Tune and the Arizona Cardinals. Listen,
Clayton Tune and Elmer Fudd.
Here's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
I don't know how I feel like going forward. Like Deshaun, I will say this. He made four throws downfield that I felt like looked like good, productive throws in the NFL.
Two or three of them were completed. One of them was not. But then he continued to couldn't throw the ball. Like, it was like he had the yips when he was throwing the ball to 5 and 7 yards. He kept throwing it down. Like, if you paid attention, and I don't know how, I'm assuming you, did you watch the whole thing or did you turn it off? Yes. Like, no, when he was throwing those passes, the nose of the football is going down when he's throwing it. Like, I'm sitting there watching it live in person. And, like, it's clearly clear that he's not – his mechanics are all messed up. But at the same time, the Browns defense is just so good. I think they could, like, get them to the playoffs. What they're going to do in the playoffs, it's going to depend. Here's what I think is a crazy thing, okay? And I'm not saying this is going to happen because I don't think there's any way we beat Baltimore on Sunday, Mike. I think there's zero chance. But if the Browns win on Sunday – and Cincinnati and Pittsburgh wins, the whole AFC North will be 6-3. And we will be, all those teams will be 6-3, and Baltimore will be 7-3 because they will not have had their bye yet. Like, think about that. That would be all four teams would be 3 games over .500, 9 or 10 games into the season.
I mean, there's a world where all four of those teams could make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the problem with that is theoretically possible. However, the amount of games that we play against each other, it really hurts that. You have to basically go .500 in the amongst the division, like all three teams basically going 3-3 in the division, and then taking care of business outside the division. I mean, is it possible? Yes. And that would be crazy. Obviously would be the first time that ever happens. Because they've only had the 7 games, but that would be crazy if all four teams in the AFC North, if that was the case, Mike, then I would want to finish in fourth in the AFC North and get the 7th spot. Because then we have a better schedule next year. That's what I'm going to say. Because you play the 4th place team's schedule. Listen, do I feel better about the Browns? I felt better about the Browns with Deshaun Watson in there than PJ Walker. That's not really saying much. I don't think Clayton Tune would have been better than PJ Walker, but
no. Let's name that tune right to the bench.
Yeah. So you want your quick takes on the Browns?
Yeah. So I mean, the defense is dominant, and especially against crap quarterback and offense like the Cardinals threw out there on the field. And that team just had no chance. I mean, they could do absolutely nothing. And the Browns defense is good. And if you were getting above average quarterback play, I don't think there's any doubt that this team could be one of the best teams in the NFL if you had above average quarterback play, which you don't. At this point, you have below average quarterback play, which means that you're scuffling at 5-3. And I think that when you look forward, yeah, you feel better with the team with Deshaun Watson potentially being there for the rest of the season compared to PJ Walker. But you still, with Deshaun, I don't know what I'm getting on any given throw, let alone any given week. So like you said, it just doesn't feel like he's consistent enough and able to be as accurate as what he was when he was in Houston. So who knows what that's going to look like going forward. I feel confident the defense is going to play well. I agree with you that I would be stunned if they beat the Ravens this week. To me, I think the key to their season is the following week against Pittsburgh. So if you go into that game figuring you lose to the Ravens, you're 5-4. If you lose to the Steelers, then you've lost to them twice. You're 0-2 against Pittsburgh. You've now lost the tiebreaker against them. You look at the rest of the schedule, there's still a ton of wins that are on the schedule. You got to think they can beat them. I mean, at least winnable games. They can beat Denver. They can beat the Rams. The Jaguars are 6-2, but I think they can beat the Jaguars. They can beat the Bears. They can beat the Texans. They can beat the Jets.
The Texans, CJ Stroud might go crazy.
Yeah, Stroud. Yeah, that was an insane performance. What that guy put up on Sunday, passing for whatever, 470 yards, 5 touchdowns. Clearly he's good. But again, that's a winnable game. That's not a game where you go into it thinking, oh, we have no chance. And I like our pass rush against a rookie quarterback. As good as he's been, I still feel like when you put a pass rush on a guy, that it's going to make it tough. It's going to make it tough. So
yeah,
the Bengals in that last game, that's probably going to be a game that is going to be meaningful for both teams. That's a game we probably are going to lose. So I feel like if you win that Steelers game, you're 6-4, then you've probably got to get.
Well, so you're saying we're going to beat the Ravens, Mike? You're saying we're beating the Ravens?
No. We'd be 5-4 after we lose the Ravens, and we beat the Steelers. Oh, okay. You're 6-4. You're 6-4. So then you probably need 4 wins. You probably need to go 4-3 the rest of the way. That gets you to 10. I think 10 wins probably gets you in the playoffs. So, plus, I think you feel better about the Steelers. If you lose to the Ravens and the Steelers back to back, and you're at 5-5. I'm not sure where the mentality of this team and the city is. So to me, that Steelers game is the key game, especially since it's a home game. I think that's going to be a game that you're going to have to win. You're going to have to bring it. There's no reason why the Browns shouldn't win that game. But I think that's the springboard to the second half of the season, or it's the game that just kind of puts everything in the tank and, you know, it's over. So.
Fair assessment, Mike. Fair assessment. We'll see how it goes. Next week on the Hoopheads Pod, we'll talk about Lamar Jackson. Maybe he'll have to go to the bathroom a whole bunch of times in the game again.
Let's cross our fingers. But the Ravens are like a franchising team that just never die. It just feels like feels like they're the same team they were in 2000, and they have a completely, obviously, different roster. But it's just like, how can the Steelers and Ravens just continue to get here after year after year after year after year after year after year? It just doesn't make sense. But anyway, all right, let's leave it there. Thanks, everyone, for checking out the Hoopheads Pod tonight. Really appreciate it. Thanks for sticking with us for a little Browns talk here at the end. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.